You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Now we can make that difference. A lot of great ground.
This is the Gaffer and Hooligan Podcast. Discussions, debates, and opinions on Major League Soccer and the CONCACAF region from a Canadian perspective. Hosted by Kamal Hilton.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Gaffer and Hooligan, Red Nation Online's virtual soccer pub discussing all things MLS and CONCACAF from a Canadian perspective. I am your host, Kamal Hilton, and I'm joined by one of my RNO colleagues, Andres Torres. He's new to the site, and he's a RNO contributor and kind of a South American expert. How's it going, Andres?
I'm good, Kamal. I'm here to talk to you guys for the first time and hopefully give my insight as best as I can to the situation with CONCACAF and CONMEBOL.
Yeah, you're going to see a lot of his work more. He does a lot of like interviewing of players and video work. We'll be doing some video work later on. We're not going to get too much into that right now. But this podcast is not going to be about MLS or CONCACAF. This is the start of our World Cup coverage. And I wanted to, before we give out our official picks or anything, I wanted to do a series of podcasts just previewing each region. So we've split it up into three. And the first ones we're doing is CONMEBOL and CONCACAF, since Andres is South American and I cover CONCACAF. I thought that would be a good start to things. So, and basically what we're going to do is give quick overview of the teams, their group situations, and any expectations, and if we see dark horses and things like that. So, let's get started.
With Group A?
Well, let me go over the South American teams first.
Okay.
We have Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, Ecuador, and your beloved Uruguay. So let's start with, I guess we can go by group. Let's go by group. Group A, and the South American team in there is Brazil. And with them is grouped with them is Croatia, Mexico, and Cameroon. So let's talk Brazil. I'll throw it to you. General thoughts.
I think Brazil is obviously the strongest of the group. I think they have a problem, which is they don't have the traditional striker, number 9, which they are known to having. There's no more Luis Fabiano. Neymar is taking the reins with Oscar a little in the middle. But I think that is probably the only downside I can think of to their game, is they're missing that goal scorer that they're used to having.
Yeah, they've gone with Fred, right?
They've gone with Fred. They've gone with Fred, but you know, when you go from down the list of Brazilian strikers, you go from Ronaldo, Rivaldo, Luis Fabiano, and then Fred. So he doesn't fill the shoes of the old number 9s that we're used to seeing in Brazil. But I think they more than make up for it in the middle. Especially, you saw the way they play in the Confederations Cup. Neymar and Oscar have a crazy understanding of each other, and they're a constant danger for any defense. And
one thing that I kind of, I guess, notice about them is their fullback situation. They go with Marcelo and
Dani Alves. Yeah.
Personally, I don't want to put personal bias into them, but I don't like either of them.
Which ones would you go with?
I don't really know who else they have there. But
well, the center backs is they're pretty. They have Dante, David Luiz, and Silva from PSG. So they're really solid in the back. But I think it doesn't get really much better than Real Madrid and Barcelona. Marcelo and Dani Alves.
I would just be worried from a defensive.
Yeah, they're more attacking. They run that wing all game. In the defensive side, they're slacking because not even their midfielders are anymore. They used to have Emerson, who was known for running back, and now they're more very attacking based team.
So looking at the group situation, do you see any of the defenses from Croatia, Mexico, or Cameroon giving
defensively? No. Defensively, I realistically don't think there is a team with a defense that can stand Brazil in Brazil, seeing the way they played in the Confederations Cup, scoring 4 goals on Spain in the final. against Piqué, against Puyol, against Jordi Alba, you know, like play, like defenders who are world class. And if they're on their game, Brazil, and they can do whatever they want. It's about, I think the best defense against Brazil will be a strong offense.
Are you confident in Scolari to get?
I think he's done all the right moves so far. I don't see, usually with Brazilian coaches, you always see that one player who's left out, but I think Scolari has it nailed. I think he didn't miss anyone. There's an argument about Ronaldinho, if he should go, or if Fernandinho should be a starter right now, but I think he's nailed it so far. What we've seen in the friendlies and the Confederations Cup, I think he's being perfect.
So your expectations of them are like, I guess, very strong.
Oh yeah, Brazil right now, after what we've seen, I think they're up there.
Okay, let's move on to Group B, and I actually forgot this team in the open, so apologies to my Chilean brethren, but we're going to move on to Chile, and they're in Group B with Spain, Netherlands, and poor little Australia.
Australia.
I don't know what FIFA, or what they did to FIFA, I don't know, man.
I think Chile is amazing. I don't even think they're considered a dark horse anymore. I think they're strongest in South America.
I was about to ask you.
Oh, yeah.
If you felt they were a dark horse.
No, I think Chile is past that. An informed Chile could beat any team right now in the world. They showed it against Spain, they showed it against Germany. Chile has Vidal, who is right now, to me, the best midfielder in the world right now. And they have Sanchez, they have Vargas, they can play, for sure. And they have the South American thing. Their fans are the craziest fans. They have statistically the most loyal fans to them that follow them all around the world. And I think that's going to help a lot. And they have a full squad right now. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to be great in their group.
So comparing the 2010 team to that team, because that team, the 2010 team, was under Bielsa.
Yeah.
And now he's not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I off the top of my head, I can't. I don't know what the name of the coach is.
Sampaoli. Yeah, Sampaoli is. He was also in the Chilean rankings when he was younger. Everyone already knew he was coming after the old coach left from Chile. And I think from the 2010 team, they lost their, I think, you know, Humberto Suazo, mm-hmm. who was a legendary goal scorer for Chile. He's lost it now.
Plays in Mexico.
He plays in Mexico. He's lost it a little now. You can't really rely on him to do the goal scoring anymore. But what they've lost in Suazo, I think they've gained in Sanchez and in Vidal. And they have Gary Medel. They have a very strong lineup.
So looking at, so the reason why I brought up Bielsa is, will Sampaoli play an identical or almost similar system to how Bielsa played? Is it any different?
I think it's improved. It's more attacking now. They sure know how to capitalize on the weaknesses of other teams. You can see that during the qualification, how you can't make a mistake around Chile. They showed a little weaknesses in the defense, and they've been very unlucky with injuries and red cards. So I don't think we've had the chance to see Chile at full strength yet, which just shows how dangerous they can actually be. But I think they're for sure one of the powerhouses of the World Cup right now.
So looking at their group situation, that was one of the groups of death.
Yeah, that's one of the three hard groups that we have in this World Cup.
So do you see, well, I guess Spain and Netherlands can definitely give them problems, but do you see Chile actually giving those teams problems?
I can see them giving Spain huge problems, because they played each other last World Cup, and they used their B line against them, and they still caused major problems. And we've seen two friendlies between Chile and Spain that show that Chile can take them on head to head. And with Netherlands, I think Netherlands has decreased a lot during the time off from the last World Cup. They've aged a lot of their older players already. Schneider, for example, has gone down to Galatasaray in the Turkish league, and Van Persie's having a lackluster season at United. And as the other three teams are falling, I think Chile's picking up, and their players are getting better as time goes on. Australia, I don't see causing a problem for any, unfortunately, because Australia is a good team. Mm-hmm. They've showed it. They are unlucky in the fact that they don't have a very competitive qualifying. So once the World Cup does hit them harder than other teams, but
well, I would disagree on that point only because they moved from Oceania to Asia, so it is more competitive.
It's more competitive, but
it's just not as it's nowhere near the level.
Yeah, exactly. So I think those poor Asian countries, the World Cup does hit them way harder because they're just met with a level that they're not used to. When, for example, Chile. On a daily basis, they're thinking about countries like Argentina, Brazil, Uruguay, Colombia, Ecuador, you know, and it's just they're more used to the level.
Okay, so looking at their expectation, your expectations of them are high, I would think, judging by what you're saying.
Yeah, for sure. Yes.
Okay, so we're not gonna give up predictions yet. I'm trying to hold off on giving up predictions. I want to save that for later. But let's move on to Group C. I think this is a lot of people's dark horse pick.
Oh yeah.
Colombia, and in their group you have Greece, Ivory Coast, and Japan. I think the most balanced group out of the bunch.
Yeah, it looks to be the most the fairest group, you can say, where any combination of the two could go through. Colombia to me is the dark horse, and unfortunately they've been hit with a big loss, an injury to Falcao, who we're not sure if he will or won't play the World Cup. We do know that what we can see from their players, by the way they play during the weekends and during the league games, that they have a more than capable team. Freddy Guarín, they have Zuniga, they have the forwards on Porto. They have a good team. With or without Falcao, they have a very, very good team, and they're very capable of even getting out of the group or getting far in the World Cup without Falcao. Obviously, if Falcao does join, then that's a whole new level of Colombia that you have to look out for.
So if he's not there, is the main guy Jackson Martinez?
Jackson Martinez will be the guy that everyone points to score the goals. He's a very, very good goal scorer. Obviously not like Falcao, but they adapted very fast without Falcao, and they didn't show, you didn't expect them to do as good as they did without Falcao. Everyone, I think, thought that they were going to stop scoring goals, and even during against Uruguay, they scored 5 goals, and Falcao only scored 1 of them, so they're a very goal scoring team, and they're getting better and better. They have young guys. And like I said, Jackson Martinez, Zuniga from Napoli, and then you got Freddy Guarín and Inter. They're just a very well-balanced team.
So looking at this entire group, do you see any of these other teams giving Colombia a problem, particularly giving Colombia's defense a problem?
I see, from what I've seen from Japan lately, especially in the Confederation Cup, the way they played was perfect. I think Japan played amazing in the Confederations Cup. They were unlucky, I think, in some of the situations that happened during their games. I think now they have Honda at Milan, and they have Kagawa at Manchester United, who is amazing, and I think he's treated unfairly at United. I think he should play way more and be a more important part of the game. I think Ivory Coast as well. And Ivory Coast is always dangerous in any tournament they're in. But I see Japan and Colombia at a higher level than Ivory Coast right now. I think Ivory Coast isn't just Drogba anymore. Mm-hmm. I think they have to even it out a little more to be a little more competitive. But I don't think they're at the level of Colombia and Japan. And Greece, I don't see causing any problems. I think that they won't be stepped on. I think they'll give a good fight. But I don't see them causing at the same level as Japan, Ivory Coast, and Colombia.
Okay, so let's move on to Group D. And this is your team, so I don't know. Let's just put it out there. You are Uruguayan.
Yeah. So it's a hard group. To me, it's the hardest group.
So in their group, you have Costa Rica, England, and Italy.
Yeah. To me, it's a harder group than Group G, which is Germany, Portugal, Ghana, USA. I think that, in the last World Cup, 2010, Uruguay got in through playoffs. We didn't qualify directly. They beat Jordan in Jordan 5-0 and were unable to score in Uruguay, but they qualified from the difference. Obviously, they have, I think, to me, one of the best international duos in the world, or even trios if you want to put Forlan in there, Edison Cavani and Luis Suarez, which are at a very high level right now. Especially Suarez right now, to me, is the best forward, bias aside, in the world, by his numbers and his stats that he puts out weekend after weekend. a lot of Uruguayan players are very used to the Italian style of play, and I think that works in our favor because Uruguayans play in Italy. Italians don't play in Uruguay, so I think Italy won't be as much as a problem for us as England will, because England is still England, and as much as you hate to say it, names do count in soccer. It does intimidate players to face England, to have players like Sturridge, players like the Manchester United guys, a group of them that will be there. And yeah, I think England, it's a very fair group. I don't see anyone stepping over anyone else. Even Costa Rica, I think, has a very good chance in that group.
So are you concerned about any part of your team in relation to this group?
Oh yeah, I think the midfield in Uruguay is not up to par to the teams in the World Cup. I think we're good in the defense. We have Diego Godin, we have Martin Caceres right now, we have Maxi Pereira, who is in Benfica, who's playing amazing every weekend. And in the midfield, we just have the holding midfielders, who I think are dying down a lot in soccer. They're not used anymore, and we have three of them in the starting lineup. So I think that's a huge problem that should be fixed way before the World Cup. I think right now they should start looking into what midfielders to use instead of the defensive style of play we have, and then just hoping that Cavani or Suarez could be on game to put the goals in.
Okay, let's move on to Group E. And to me, this is my dark horse. Mm-hmm. It's Ecuador. Mm-hmm. And Ecuador is in a group with Switzerland, France, and Honduras. Mm-hmm. And to me, the reason why I have them as my dark horse is for a few. A, they're playing for Chucho Benitez,
yeah,
which I think is a big factor. Oh, yeah. To me. I mean, he was so young and he died, and he was going to be a major factor for them at the World Cup.
That's a huge loss.
And I think they're going to be playing in his memory. But mm-hmm. also, looking at the outlay of this group, I don't really see it as so challenging for them. I mean, I am not high on France myself. I mean, I think they can play with Honduras. Mm-hmm. And then Switzerland was they were like the odd first team to come out of the pot, right?
Yeah.
I think that's a winnable group for them, to me.
Me too. And don't forget the fact that they're in the hottest part of Brazil, which is right up Ecuador's alley, because they play in the altitude and they're used to drowning out other teams. So they'll be right at home with that. They don't have Chucho Benitez anymore, which was their star player. Even, I think, better, more influential than Valencia. But they still have Valencia, who takes charge of that team. They're a very, very, very good team on the right circumstances. They're a team that's not scared to shoot outside the box. They're a team who pressures very deeply into the opponent's half. France is another one you can't count out, because a lot of people still have the image of France from the last World Cup, where they basically came last place in the whole World Cup. But if you look at their squad now with the players they have, with Pogba and Benzema, and it's a very, very good squad. And I do see Ecuador coming out of this group 100% with the squad they have. Yeah.
The one thing that's interesting about this matchup, you have Ronaldo Rueda is their coach, mm-hmm. who coached Honduras in 2010. So when they meet each other, I think that's going to be pretty interesting.
That's a huge advantage for Ecuador. And Honduras did play good in the 2010 World Cup.
Yeah.
They had Spain in their group, unfortunately for them, that they couldn't, and they had Chile as well. So it was a hard group for them. This is a more doable group for them, if you wanna talk about, I guess, levels of competitiveness. But Ecuador is a good team for sure, 100%. It's very, very bad news for them that they lost Benitez. It's the same situation as that Paraguay had in 2010, just before the World Cup. They lost their star player Cabanas from a headshot, and I guess it's just a curse that South American teams have and have been having. But Paraguay got to quarterfinals without Cabanas, and let's see how Ecuador can manage without their star player, right?
Yeah. So, and then to finally round out CONMEBOL, we have Argentina and their group. They have Bosnia and Herzegovina. They have Iran and they have Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
So, looking at that group for them, what do you see? What do you see about their team?
I think it's going to be I hope they don't underestimate the other three teams, because they got Bosnia, Iran, and Nigeria. Obviously, not on the same level as Argentina at all. I think not even close. I see Nigeria always does good against South American teams, but I don't see them at I don't see them as a threat. They were in the same group in 2010, Nigeria and Argentina, and Argentina didn't walk all over them. And Nigeria could have won the game if they missed a few easy goals. Bosnia, we know, has Dečko, and he's a huge factor, and he's doing good right now, and he led them into this is their first World Cup, and usually teams that are in their first World Cup will play for much more than teams that, I don't know, they're just there trying to obviously make it out of the group, but they're playing for so much more than that. And, you know, the mind does a lot in the sport. It's not just about playing. It's actually a lot of the mind factor. And Iran, I don't see as a threat to any of the other three. I think second place is up for grabs between Nigeria and Bosnia. And I think Argentina will have a huge advantage, because they're in such a high level compared to these other three teams that their games will be like statistical practices for them and tactical changes. And they'll be able to really see how the team is doing without the pressure that other teams will face.
Okay. I think we can leave that segment there. Mm-hmm. But again, let us know your thoughts. You can tweet me directly at Kamal Hilton. Leave a comment underneath this post on the RNO site. You can go to the Gaffron Hooligan Facebook page. And as of April 15th, you can also find us on the War Room Sports Podcast Network. But let's go to segment two and talk CONCACAF. Okay. I guess this is my area of expertise. Uh-huh. So we'll do the same thing and go back into Group A, and we have Mexico. And again, to run over the group, they're grouped with Brazil, Croatia, and Cameroon. And to me, yes, they struggled to get into the World Cup. They had to rely on the Americans, yeah. Which was that was pretty funny, seeing how that played out. Yeah. But I like this team. I mean, I like them because almost all their players play in Liga MX,
mm-hmm.
and that's a big thing.
That's a huge thing
for any team in the World Cup, for most of your players to come from a local league that's at a high level.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a big thing. The one concern is Chicharito doesn't play for Manchester United, and he's key for them.
And they lost Vela too.
Yeah.
He decided not to play for Mexico.
There's that whole thing too. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, it's a bad situation. Mexico always does good against Brazil. It's one of those things in soccer. Every team has their kryptonite. And I think Brazil's kryptonite is Mexico, 100%. They do have a good soccer, a good game, a good rhythm. And they've been doing good in the friendlies. What I don't like is that is the whole Vela situation again. He opted not to play for his own country. And I think Croatia and Cameroon are gonna just battle it out for that second place against Brazil. But do you think that Mexico will be an offensive threat to the Croatia and Cameroon?
Definitely against Cameroon.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. I think they can keep the ball on the ground and frustrate Cameroon and African teams. Not to generalize, but African teams, when they get frustrated, they tend to get a lot of red cards and produce a lot of fouls.
Yeah.
Croatia will be the tougher test for them, because they have, not to get into the whole European preview, we'll save that for later, but they have star players like Modric,
Rakitic, Mandzukic.
Yeah, their midfield is quite good.
Oh yeah.
So that'll be a challenge for them. But I think the climate, the fact that it's in South America plays in their advantage.
Oh yeah.
Even more so than, I know Cameroon plays in Africa and it's hot there, but I think having most of their players based there and everything, I think gives them an advantage. And I like their chances in that group.
Yeah, I do too.
Beyond playing Brazil, mm-hmm. I like their chances. But the next team we want to move over to is Group D, and that is Costa Rica, and they're grouped with your boys, Uruguay, they're grouped with England, and they're grouped with Italy. And for me, their attack could be one of the more underrated in the World Cup.
Bolaños. I think
they have his name, Brian Oviedo.
Yeah.
They have Brian Ruiz.
Brian Ruiz.
They have Alvaro Saborillo, who I know he plays in MLS, and some people knock it, but that guy's one of the better forwards there. Yeah. They have Joel Campbell.
We saw how good he did against United.
Yeah.
So they have a huge, huge team, and I think they're getting very, very underestimated between the Italians, the English, and even the Uruguayans are just, they don't even talk about Costa Rica. If you talk about Group D, no one mentions Costa Rica, but I think these European teams especially, because the South American teams have an idea. Uruguay faced Costa Rica in the 2010 playoffs, and they beat them 1-0 away, and they tied 1-1 at home. So they have a pretty good idea of how explosive Costa Rica can be. But obviously, England and Italy do their research, and they watch a million Costa Rica games and know them inside out, but I think it's a whole different story when you never play them. I think they have explosive forwards. They have Brian Ruiz especially, and Joel Campbell, the way he's doing right now in Greece, is a big indication that they're going for it in the World Cup for sure.
Yeah, and they even have another young forward, Gianjaro Ruiz, who was coveted by Barcelona and Arsenal, amongst other teams, when he was coming up from Saprissa, I think it was. And he's playing... I don't know how much he's actually playing in Lille, but he's part of that club, which is a big deal.
Yeah, for sure, 100%. The Central America is a hard section to get out of, right? You don't see that many star players coming out of Central America. We had Suazo in Inter, and that's probably one of the bigger ones to come out. Brian Ruiz plays soccer in Holland, and he's always a threat, always scoring goals. Even for Costa Rica, he's their main man. It's just that I think he's getting a little older, a little more frustrated, because he's been in the team for so long, and I think he's not as hungry as the younger guys, especially going through the upsets that Costa Rica has been through.
But looking at this group, I know most people will peg them as finishing last, but I think there is a chance that they can get out of the group underneath Uruguay. Personally, that's just me.
Yeah.
I think they can give England a game. I think they can, if they can keep it at 0-0 long enough against Italy, I think they can squeak a draw.
Oh, yeah. They can do damage, especially if they're underestimated. I hope that they're not underestimated, because then there will be an upset. Especially that we've seen teams like Italy and England give huge advantages in games. Even against Italy, against Japan in the Confederations Cup, we've seen Italy not on their game against, quote, smaller teams, right? So I think Costa Rica could for sure do some damage.
But, I think they're a quite strong option. But the next group we're going to move to is Group E, and that is Honduras. That's my dark horse, personally.
Yeah?
Yeah, for me. And, yeah, they're grouped against France.
Of the World Cup or of the...
I mean, I'm not gonna go too crazy. I love CONCACAF, but I'm not gonna go too nuts. But I mean, I think it. When I say dark horse, I mean a team that will do better than you expect them to do. Not necessarily to win the entire thing.
For sure.
You know.
Yeah. Well, Group E is probably a group full of dark horses. Maybe not France. France, if you want to look at the situation, but I think Switzerland, Ecuador, France, and Honduras. People just kind of skim by that group when they look at it. They don't see any threats in that group. But I think that, there's a lot of talent in that group for sure. Honduras, their team is not... Obviously, when you talk about Honduras, you don't talk about a World Cup winning team. You don't talk about a semifinal team. But that's not what it's all about. And we're not talking about... It's still good to play the World Cup and see... It's good to see a team like Honduras come out of the group and cause a major threat. To give big names a match.
To me, I think this, it's for them, for teams like them, it's more getting their guys on a world stage that can get them into Europe or South America.
Yeah.
And particularly for this team, because a lot of their guys reside in MLS.
Yeah.
You have Jerry Bankston, who plays for New England Revolution. Marvin Chavez plays for Colorado Rapids now. Mm-hmm. probably one of their best players, Oscar Bonilla Garcia, who many of you might know, plays for Houston Dynamo. And then they have Victor Bernardes, who I really like as a center back in MLS.
Yeah.
I watch a lot of MLS games. He's one of... He can score goals, but he gets red cards.
Oh, he's a hothead. And then they have a few in Europe, Figueroa in Hull City. They have in Wigan Athletic, Carlos Garcia. And then they have a pair in Scotland, Isigarre and Perlata.
Yeah, I like Isigarre, actually. He's fullback. I wish he wasn't playing in Scotland, but I mean, whatever.
Yeah, at least he's on one of those teams that always takes it. Celtic has almost no competition in Scotland. So he does show his talent there. It's like you said, though. They're going to get on the world stage. They're going to get better. They've been getting better. It's very uncommon for a team to make it into the World Cup twice in a row from Central America. You have Mexico and the United States that are always there. And Costa Rica, who was usually always competing for that final spot. So it's good to have four American teams plus the five South American teams. So it's gonna be a big World Cup for I think the American half of the world.
Yeah. And then to round things out, we have Group G. Most people will call it the Group of Death. You have the United States. They're grouped with Germany, Portugal, and Ghana. Most people have them finishing at the bottom. And this is a team chock full of MLS guys, we all know. Which I find interesting. The main guy everybody will be paying attention to here is Michael Bradley.
Yeah. Which is an amazing player we've seen. A lot of people didn't think he had it in him, but I think he even took over as a star. And I think he left Defoe kind of on the side because he's been taking that team by the by the front and then moving it all
you
the way.
You can say by the balls, okay?
Yeah, he's been I think the star of Toronto FC. He showed major character because he had to take he had to step into the side at first when everyone was very excited about the fall, and on the field he's shown that it's about him. He's a very, very good player. Clint Dempsey is a player on the Sounders who had, I think personally, has dropped a few levels.
Oh yeah.
Since the last World Cup.
Even like, since he's even come to MLS, he really hasn't done anything.
Yeah, he's. I think maybe there's even better forwards in MLS than him to be on the national squad. Mm-hmm. I think he's there from experience. He's shown he can be on the national team, but I think at this point, he for sure doesn't deserve a start, and I think there's. The USA could do better than him in the
final. I actually lied. He did make one contribution. He punched Toronto FC. Mark Bloom, he punched him in the balls.
Yeah. But, he got a red card for that, right?
He got suspended. He got suspended. Two games. Yeah. But the one concern I would say I have for the Americans is their fullback position, especially against guys like Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah.
They have to go up against and... whoever the hell Germany's putting up there.
Schweinsteiger. Yeah.
They have like a myriad of options they can go to. There is like they're relying on like DeMarcus Beasley. Yeah. They had him out there. Brad Evans they had out there. They have a younger guy. They have DeAndre Yedlin, who's a promising player for the Sounders. But really, do you think he's going to stop Cristiano Ronaldo?
No, I think that's a huge problem. They showed they can take big teams in the World Cup. They against England. Obviously, England isn't up to standards anymore as they once were. But I think even being able to tie them and even score on them, it showed that they're moving up. They were top 10 in the world. USA isn't an easy team to beat. Do I think they'll beat Germany? No. Do I think they'll stop Cristiano Ronaldo? No. But I think they're definitely a threat to the other teams there.
The way I see their group shaking out for them, it's like the best way it could shake out for them. They have Ghana first.
Yeah.
Then they play Portugal, and then they end off with Germany.
They got lucky with
that. So if they beat Ghana, and find a way to tie yeah. Portugal, and Germany have won their two games.
They'll use their beeline against the United right? States. And
so it shakes out
yeah.
good for them. I'm just not sure they'll do what they expect to do.
And what do you think about Donovan, 32 years old?
They rely a little bit too much. I think it's Michael Bradley's team now. Yeah. They should more look towards him and find... Like, they have... Depends on, like, who they... Like, they have guys, but you don't really know what you're going to get from. Like, they have Jozy Altidore they can play, but he's barely playing for Sun.
Yeah, he's not at the top level right now. Landon Donovan has 57 goals in 156 appearances. He's the symbol of the United States team, and he has been. Michael Bradley has 83 caps with 12 goals, and he's only at age 26. He hasn't even reached his prime yet.
Yeah, it all depends on where how they play Michael Bradley.
Too. Yeah,
I think they've been playing him more, and he's for Toronto FC. He's not a purely defensive midfielder.
No, I think he's everywhere. He plays very very loose. He's always on the ball. Makes very good runs off the ball. He's an all around good player. It's just that. The level he plays at, obviously, in the MLS playing for Toronto FC, when you go against Champions League winners Bayern Munich, Cristiano Ronaldo, and obviously Ghana, Prince, and Gian, players like that who have European experience for years and years now and have major cups under their names.
Yeah.
But I think the USA, for sure, will be... they won't be an easy target in that group.
I think that's a good place to leave it. But again, you can let us know your thoughts. Tweet me directly at Kamal Hilton. Leave a comment underneath this post on the RNO site, on the Gaffer and Hooligan Facebook page. And also, as of April 15th, you can find this podcast on the War Room Sports Podcast Network. But Andres, where can people find you on Twitter or...
I'm on Twitter, Ator Sports. I do constant updates on football facts around the world. I live stream games. I live update games. I'm usually on there. You can contact me there at any time. And I'm at Red Nation Online. You can leave a comment on my articles or find my information on there.
And one other plug that I'd like to make before we get out of here is check out Plastic Pitch. Issue 1's out. We're hard at work on issue 2. I did a piece on Dejan Jakovic and his move to the J-League and Shimizu S-Pulse. So I think you guys will enjoy that. Be sure to check out our other brands within the RNO family of podcasts. Eastside Stand Up with Ian Clark has you covered for all things TFC. Steve Botcher has the RNO interview series covering key figures within the game. From the Black Hole with Rob, Jeff, and Lars. They just had an NASL preview that I think you guys should check out. And the newest podcast to join the RNO family is Ours is the Fury, Ottawa Fury podcast, covering all things with that team. So until next time, cheers. Stop it! Gossip and singing, say, don't put a